Hi, everybody. My name is Brian, and I'm an actor. Every time I'm asked to share at a convention or something like that, I always go through the butterflies, so it takes me a few minutes to get over. I always feel like you did in junior high school when you knew you had to be in the fight and there wasn't no backing out of the fight. It's like, let's just stop talking and like let's just get down and get it over with. Like that's where I'm at right now. First of all, the last time I spoke at this convention was 3 or 4 years ago, and I said at the podium that like I was hanging up my convention speaking thing. I'm done with it. I've done it enough, and I'm retiring. And so like this year, like a couple, 2 or 3 people asked me to speak, and I ran it by my sponsor. I ran it by people in my network, and a lot of people said, you know, man, a lot of people have never heard you share the convention, blah, 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 and you should do it. And if you're asked to do something in NA, you're supposed to do it. But yet, deep in my gut, I'm a man that tries to live to my values, and I try to live to my word. And I said, I'm retiring. I'm hanging it up. So I guess the point of what I'm trying to get to is that with time and recovery, I'm still full of shit sometimes. Take what I have to say like with a grain of salt, because then I'm halfway full of shit half the time. Today's kind of the first time that I've ever been asked to share on a step or tradition. They want us to do a little bit of step one and then go to tradition one. So it's not like I'm doing step one and he's doing. It's kind of like going to be like all over the place. And I'm a believer that when you come to and do a workshop, you should like kind of try to stay on topic. And I'm going to do my best. But first of all, I'm going to get off topic a little and share some news with y'all. Back when I was shooting dope in the late 70s and throughout the 80s and up to the very beginning of 1990, we didn't know about HIV back then. We didn't know about hepatitis C back then. If you were doping on the streets of D.C. where I shot dope, really the only thing you had to worry about was catching a clap, like gonorrhea or syphilis, something like that. You know, we didn't know nothing about no AIDS or no hep C or anything. And in early recovery, my first sponsor asked me to go get tested. He said, you were an IV drug user, and it's probably a good idea that you get tested for HIV and hepatitis C. Well, I passed the HIV test. I don't know how. But I failed the hepatitis C. And so like all my years in recovery, that's been kind of like a thing that's been in the back of my mind. You know, it's been like a stigma that I've had in my own mind that, you know, it's just part of my using, you know, that I got this hepatitis C. And it's kind of fucked up because like if you meet a girl and you start dating and it starts getting serious, you got to like have the talk with her. You know what I mean? And if it worked, if you cut yourself, you got to tell people, you know, you got to be, stay away from my blood and all that. You know, it's just always been there. To cut to the chase, about a year and a half ago, they came out with some new medications that have like a really high cure rate. And so, like, I heard some people, matter of fact, a guy sitting in this workshop today was like the first guy I heard really talking about it. And I thought to myself, well, maybe I should just go give this a shot. And I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to God's care. And I took action. I went and saw a doctor, and he referred me to another. To make a long story short, I got approved for this very, very expensive hepatitis C treatment. And I went through the 3 months of taking these pills, and it's not as bad as the old way, but it still wasn't no walk in the park. Like every day I had a freaking headache, and every day the sun would shine, and I couldn't stand the sunshine. But I went through it, and I went to work, and I did what I was supposed to do. And then after you're done with the treatment for 12 weeks, you got to wait 12 weeks to find out if you're clear or not. And anyway, I was at work a couple weeks ago and the phone rang, and of course I got caller ID and I could tell it was a doctor's office, and it was the doctor himself. And he said, Mr. Kenneman, I wanted to be the one to have the pleasure. I'm telling you that you're clear, you're undetected, you don't got to worry about it no more, as long as you behave yourself. And I tell everybody, it's probably going to be my luck, I'll be the one to catch Ebola or something. Well, like I've been like in a really good place on the past 2 weeks, but as I share that, this miracle is still kind of bittersweet because I have so many dear friends that the treatment didn't work out for, and I have friends that haven't been able to achieve and get it, and my prayers go out to those people that they get one day to feel what I'm feeling. Anyway, step one, to get on topic, which says that we admitted that we were powerless over our addiction and our lives were on end. I remember my father, when I was like 17, 18 years old. He was a PG County redneck back in the 60s and 70s, redneck police officer. Back then, like, they didn't care about, you know, your right to remain, you know, it was like they just cracked your head open, took you to jail, took you to the hospital, it's a lot. And he knew I was using drugs when I was 16 and 17, and after one of those times when he caught me, and I don't remember exactly what happened, but I'll never forget, after he tuned my ass off, which means he threw me around and whipped my ass real damn good, because he was pretty pissed off at what I was doing. After he tuned me up good, he just looked at me and he was just red as a beet in his face. And he said, "What in the fuck is wrong with you, boy? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?" And I'm the kind of guy, I've got like a quick answer for everything. I'm pretty fast on my feet. When you ask me, I got something to say. It might not be right. I'm pretty quick. But I will never forget when he asked me that question of what was wrong with me, I didn't have an answer. I knew something was wrong with me, but I didn't know what was wrong with me. And throughout all my career abuse, and I'm not going to say that I thought about that every day, but from time to time, often, that question would come back into my head when they locked me up, or when they, you know, took me to the emergency room overdose, or, you know, when some girl dumped my ass because I was a piece of, you know, all that. That question that my father asked me, "What is wrong with you?" Now keep that in mind. I go to treatment, I hit my bottom, blah, blah, blah. And first of all, this is my experience, and I'm not no ultimate authority of step working or anything like that, so please just keep in mind this is the way it was given to me. Back in the old days, my first sponsor and his network, they didn't put me right on to step one when I got here. It's kind of like they wanted to see if I met the prerequisite, and we read the prerequisite to step work every meeting we go to when we read how it works. It says, if you want what we have to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, then you're ready to take certain steps. And my sponsor and his network were checking me out. They weren't going to waste their damn, back in the old, they weren't wasting time on you if you were just coming here for some more things and shit. And they were seeing if I was taking the little suggestions, like go to 90 meetings in 90 days and getting a home group and getting phone numbers and using phone numbers and all the little things that we tell new people. They were seeing if I was. But anyway, I've been clean about 4 or 5 months, and I had a basic text, and my sponsor put me on step one, and he had me read it every day, and I'm not going to say he had me read it every day for 30 days. He had me read it every day for like 9 months, at least once. And I don't know when in that process of reading that step every day, when it occurred, probably after 2 or 3 months of reading it every day, I'm reading the basic text, and, you know, it's telling me about my disease, and it's telling me all that. And it just dawned on me, this epiphany. By the way, I remember the first time I heard epiphany in a meeting. I was like 2 months clean, and this lady said, "I had an epiphany last night." And I looked at the lady, the guy beside me, I said, "I shot that shit. It's pretty good." But I had this epiphany as I'm reading the first step that there's the answer to the question that my dad was asking me back when I was 17 years old. What the fuck is wrong with you? Every sentence in that step, I'm soused with addiction. I went, oh, there it is. I even wanted to go show my dad. Here it is, Dad. There's so much valuable information in our basic text with step one, and I believe, and I'm a student of our literature, and I don't like to be a guy that quotes literature all the time, but I have to tell you that I think the most profound line in any Narcotics Anonymous is found in step one in the basic text. And it's just, to me, it's very profound. It says, we found we had no choice but to completely change our old ways of thinking or go back to using. Think about that for a second. No choice but to completely change our old ways of thinking or go back. And I tell you, that's why I keep coming back after all these years, because to be honest with you, my old ways of thinking are far from being completely changed. I still think like a dope fiend most all the time. Thank God I know that my thinking is crazy. Now let's jump ahead to step two. Real quick, because I'm going to come bring it back to step one. Step two talks about coming to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. If I've been thorough in my first step work, and I understand and look at my story, and understand all the symptomology of this disease and figure all that out, one thing should be really, really clear to me. I'm fucking crazy as shit. And I might be breaking something here, but there's a book that is used in like all the therapists, you know, and the psychiatrists and all that. It's called back in the old days, it was the DSM-3 or the DSM-4, the DSM-5. It's a Diagnostic Service Manual of Mental Illness. They got every fucking mental thing that you can think of up in that thing. They got bipolar, they got schizophrenia, they got everything. And right in the middle of that book is addiction. I think we're the only ones that has conventions. I might be wrong about that. It's all right, though. It's all right, man. It's all right. That I at least most crazy people don't know they're crazy. I know I am. The first step tells me that I got a disease that's threefold. It's physical, it's mental, and it's spiritual. This is all a matter of opinion, but I believe, you know, we say Narcotics Anonymous is not a religious program. We say it's a... And I believe the spiritual part of our disease is really like 95% of the pie. You know, you put down the dope, and you come to meetings, and you start getting to know people and get away from all that. That kind of like has, God has a way of kind of like taking that away. And you start living this new way of life and getting involved in service and do all that. The obsession with dope, for me, it was 9 months clean. I'll never forget, I went a whole day without thinking about getting high. Which, you know, that was like one of the greatest miracles of my life. But it's that spiritual part that still comes at me all the time. How can I manipulate you? How can I use you? How can I make things happen? How can I? So life will be good for Brian. And here's the hit of the whole program. I'll give you 21 years that I've been clean. I'll give it all to you in a nutshell of what recovery is really kind of all about. When I stop thinking of how I can use you and you and whatever to get what I want and start looking at life and looking at people and what can I do for you to make your day better? How can I do something to serve you? How can I serve God? Not only in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, but everywhere I go. Because this thing doesn't just... My program is just not about the hour that I'm in a meeting. There's another big meeting, 23 hours the rest of the day. And I don't know how the fuck... I still don't understand exactly why it works, but the more I do for others and try to be of service to others, I don't know if their day gets any better, but my day gets great. And God does things for me like it's just unbelievable the things that go on in my life. First step in application. Now here's some old school recovery. If you're new, maybe none of y'all ever heard this, but you old timers, I'm sure, have heard this shit many, many times. The first step in the way that I applied in my life, they told me that if you hang around a hot dog stand, don't be surprised when you eat a hot dog. You hang around a barber shop? You hang around a whorehouse? I ain't got no business whatsoever messing around with people that are using narcotics. If you use them, God bless you. I've been there. I understand. But you got to do your thing. And if I go see some music somewhere where there's alcohol being served or something like that, I'm taking one of you guys with me. I'm not going up in there by myself. I got about as much chance of farting a hurricane. Really, after time. It still looked good to me. Another thing about step one, and I'm going to move along, but another thing about step one is that we learn after we've been here a while that the disease of addiction, really the use of drugs, is just but a symptom, the tip of the iceberg. I have found other things to become extremely, exquisitely addicted to in my recovery. Has anybody in here ever been in an addictive relationship? Am I the only one? You think heroin's got something on your ass? Try to get addicted to another person. I've been in relationships. I've been in love affairs in recovery. I thought it was like some of the greatest romance in the history of mankind. It was like Anthony and Cleopatra, or Romeo and Juliet, or Luke and Laura. Anybody on that room with that one? Yeah. It's the greatest romance of all, but the reality was more like Beavis and Butthead. Toxic relationship, and you talk about going through the pain of withdrawal. When you know it's over, you know it's unhealthy, you know the expiration date has arrived and you're still drinking that sour milk, and you're thinking God ain't got nothing else for you. I feel for you if you're stuck in that shit. And pray for me, I never go back there again. Oh, thank you. I lost my train of thought when you gave me that.
Relationship.
But you know what? A lot of people in the rooms will tell you shouldn't do this and you shouldn't do that. I'm a believer that every mistake that I've ever made in my recovery and every kind of bad thing, I've learned from it. And God gives us a gift from all that stuff. And that's the gift of having some experience. And you can tell somebody else that's coming along behind you, man, I got through that and I didn't have to pick up. You know, one of the most profound statements anywhere in the basic text is in recovery and relapse. And you can look it up if you don't believe me. It's right in that chapter. It says, we have never seen a person who lives the program of Narcotics Anonymous relapse. I believe that, man, with all my heart. If I come to a meeting and talk about what's going on with me, if I come in here and ask for help, I stay away from the people I need to stay away from and try to get into the solution and move on to step two and step three and call my sponsor and work with sponsees, I don't have no excuse to use ever again, and neither does anybody else in this room. And that's a miracle. Many people will tell you the first step is the one that you got to work perfectly. If you believe that, well, let me tell you, you'll find that in the literature of another 12-step fellowship. If you see me after the workshop, I'll tell you where you find it. I don't know nothing about doing shit perfect in this program. I don't know nothing about doing nothing perfect. My disease comes to me just about every day. I've been days where I've had denial. There's been days where I've justified and rationalized the most outrageous organizer. Oh, by the way, it talks about the three most biggest symptoms of our disease is denial, rationalization, and justification. If anybody don't know what those words mean, they all mean bullshit. This is a disease that will make me bullshit myself. And thank God I got a network of people in my life that are afraid or not afraid to tell me the goddamn truth. Because the truth is what will set you free. I have a disease that wants me to escape reality in whatever way it can. And it seems like the more that I live my life in reality, not what I think it should be or could be or I want it to be or it ought to be, but reality, flat for what it is. And sometimes reality is a motherfucker, ladies and gentlemen. But when I live my life in a place from reality, my life remains manageable. So step one, I could go on and on and on about step one there, but now let's jump switch to tradition one. Our common welfare comes first. Personal recovery depends upon NA unity. When I got clean and we just read the traditions, all we did was read the first two paragraphs and we read the 12 traditions. But now there's some very valuable information on the back of that pamphlet of traditions. And it says in the back of the traditions, personal recovery depends upon NA unity, and unity depends upon how well we follow the rest of our traditions. So let's break that down for a minute. When we talk about personal recovery depends upon it, that's an individual kind of thing. What personal recovery means to you or you or you or you or you. Personal recovery for me, straight up about life and death. I came into these rooms, man, dying. I came into these rooms not because like I wanted to drink some coffee, not because I wanted to look at you pretty women and shit like that, you know. I came into these rooms because like I was like half dead. And I keep coming back because I know that if I go back, that's where I'm going to be right there again. So when we talk about personal recovery depending upon NA unity, or when I'm talking about that, I'm telling y'all that my life depends upon how well I go to a meeting. Remember that I don't run shit. Nobody in here runs shit. The God of my understanding is the ultimate authority. My life depends upon the fact that each group has a primary purpose to help somebody that's still suffering. And we don't say the newcomer is the addict that's still. Sometimes it's the guy with the most time in the room is the addict that's suffering the most in that meeting. Anybody here that's new to this program thinks that every day is apple pie and Chevrolet? Keep coming. How do they say it, man, in meetings? That's one of the cliches I've never... How do they say it? My worst day in recovery was better than my best day using. That sounds good. I mean, I had some days out there using, like, you know, like I got with a couple different girls in the same day. You know, somebody fronted me, like, you know, a 10-pack. You know, some kind of good days. A couple, there weren't many. And I've had days using, man, where I felt like blowing my damn brains out of my head. I don't know what the hell was going to keep me clean. I was in so much pain. My life depends upon the fact that each group is self-supporting. And when we collect money in the basket, that the money kind of like goes to where the money's supposed to go and stuff like that. My life depends upon the fact of principles before personality. Here's another hit, man. Think of the person. Everybody thought, well, I got one or two. Think of the person that when they walk into a meeting, you just can't fucking stand them. Everybody got that person in mind? I hope it ain't me. I'll tell you something. God put that person in your life to help you more than anybody else. If you're trying to work a program of spiritual principles and practice some patience and tolerance and acceptance and understanding. I don't have to like everybody in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous, but it's my responsibility to try to love everybody in Narcotics Anonymous and try to help them if I can. And when I think of NA unity, a lot of people say that like this convention is like the big, you know, grand whatever of NA, and it's like the highlight of a lot of people's year and rah, rah, rah and all that. But I want you all to think about the addict that right now, while we're all sitting in this meeting, there's an addict, probably two or three, that's in Arlington or Southeast D.C. or maybe up in Annapolis or maybe down in my hometown, Tri-County and Waldorf. There's an addict right now thinking, right this very minute, I think tonight's the night I'm going to go to an NA meeting. I'm going to give this thing a try. I mean, I got to stop doing what I'm doing. Thank God for the people that love recovery enough that they stay back at the meeting on Friday night and Saturday night. Thank God for those people, man, to make sure that the meeting goes on for that addict is just walking into their very first meeting. Can you imagine if you went to your first NA meeting and everybody was at the convention and there wasn't no meeting? That's like what I try to do most years is I like to try to stay home. Thank God for the people who care and love this program so much that every week or every month they go into the jails and do H&I work. When we talk about NA unity, there's an addict right now sitting in some fucking cell with some CEO telling him what time he's got to go to the bathroom and when he can take a shower. And he's every bit as much a part of this fellowship as anybody in here. And thank God for the people that love H&I and love carrying the message and love addicts. Thank God for them. They're the ones that brought me meetings and stuff back in the day and where I first heard the message of NA. I got the 5-minute thing. Man, this time like kind of flew right on by. I want to tell anybody that's new to this program that if this program can work for a crazy ass fool like me, it can work for anybody. Keep coming back. Give yourself a chance. Try to go to 90 meetings in 90 days. Get a home group. Get a sponsor. Do the things that we do, and miracles can happen for you. And it's an honor to be asked to be a part of this convention again. And I'm not going to say I'm hanging it up because God knows what I'll be doing in 2 years from now. But just like a fight in junior high school, I thank God that just like a fight in junior high school, I'm glad it's all over with. Thank you for letting me share.